This is the Mercedes Lucky Benedict Show, coming to you live on Web Radio Network. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Mercedes Lucky Benedict Show. And we are back again on a Monday night. And this time I have an incredible person that is all the way across the world. Don't tell anybody, but he's all the way across the world in the United Kingdom, the UK, Mr. Ben Emlyn Jones. Hello there.
Hello, Mercedes. Great to be on the show.
I'm so glad to have you on the show, too. This is awesome. So I've been doing my research on you and not, you know, because I found you from Kev Dave Baker and listened to you there. But so I've been listening to, and I just tuned into your, you have like a Facebook thing, Friends of Ben Emlyn Jones or something. What is it?
It's called the Ben Emlyn Jones Appreciation Group. Now, I didn't set that up myself, I should point out. I'm not that big-headed, but somebody did, and I mean, it's really nice they did that, and a number of people are joining. I always post all my links there to various publications that I do, because I'm like yourself, I do a radio show. In fact, I do three regularly, which I choose myself, yes.
Wow,
so,
that's awesome.
I'm sorry.
I joined it tonight.
I just found it.
So I'm like, well, how cool is that? So, yeah. So, well, Ben, you know, it's really neat. I was, you know, listening. So when I was watching you and watching you on Kev Dave Baker, the KBS show, I always just heard about, you know, just the conspiracies and things that or the things with the UFOs. But, you know, now I've done a little bit more research and it's, you know, it's very interesting. So you're a family man or you have a child and you were a hospital porter.
That's right,
and
yes.
So then you're no longer a hospital porter.
Yeah.
And so then, and you're a writer and you've got several books out, especially the one, the Roswell Trilogy, which I think is very fascinating. So there it is.
That's the Roswell Rising, A Novel of Disclosure. That's the important one to get. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that the first one?
It's the first of the Roswell Trilogy. Yes. £10 or whatever other currency of your choice in good bookshops. And if you like these kinds of radio shows, I think you'll like that book. It's a fictional account of what would happen or might happen if we get the truth instead of the lies about the things we talk about. Indeed, what I used to talk about with Kev Baker when I was on his shows before he sadly left us.
Yeah. Well, so what's interesting is when you wrote those, when you write that, and I mean, and now we do know that they, so that was several years ago. So now here we are in 2023, almost 24, and they are trying to say they're telling the truth now. What do you feel about that? How do you feel about that?
Well, it's an interesting topic. It's something that Kev and I discussed an awful lot because it seems like that I did think at some point they would have to, the government would have to come clean about the fact that, you know, humans are not alone. We're not the only intelligent species in the universe. We are being visited. The aliens aren't out there. They're actually down. They are out there, but they're also down here with us on this planet. And at some point, they would have to admit it. Now, I thought that might happen sometime in the next 20 years. And then in December 2017, an article comes out in which it's not exactly a confession, but it's a massive hint that people like us have been right all along. And I mean, there've been many, many other occasions since then when they've said more things. It's recently been held in various governments have done hearings such as Mexico, Brazil, United States. Not yet my own country, but I do hope that will come. And it appears that there is a, I mean, the disclosure with a capital D, that is, they just come out and tell us everything. That hasn't happened. But it may do. It's we're not there yet, but it appears that there's some kind of process involved by which the UFO topic goes from covert to overt, and I don't know exactly how that'll go or how long it'll take, but the enormous progress has been made in the last 6 years. It's astonishing. It really
Yeah.
is.
It's a little suspicious too, I think. But don't
Yeah.
you?
Yes, I mean, this is something we've got to be on our guard against. Is this? And Kev and I discussed this many times, and Kev had a quite a cynical view of this, probably more so than myself, but he may be right. Is this some kind of scam? Are we being lie? Is this just another lie, another deeper level of the lie? That's something we've got to be on our guard against, definitely. Yeah, I mean, there has been times in the past when state actors have infiltrated and been involved in the UFO community and have told lies to people and tried to manipulate us. Yeah.
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if part of it was a lie just to scare, to keep people more scared, because of what happened with the pandemic is all about fear. So in your work, with this research, what do you find is probably one of the most obvious things? What I mean is, what is the obvious lie? Like, what do you mean? Like, you know what I mean? So many
Yeah.
conspiracies. What is like
Oh,
the
there are
most?
plenty. There are lots of examples I could give you. I mean, I think a good example is, well, I think what radicalized me and the thing which made me realize this wasn't just something abstract, it was actually thrust into my own life, was when my daughter came home from school. This was in 2005, when she was 11 years old, and she came home from school and said, "Oh, the school want to take our fingerprints." And I said, "What?" They didn't ask our permission. They never asked the parents' permission. They said, "They're going to take our fingerprints," and they said, "Oh, it's in the school newspaper, Dad." And she showed me it, and I hadn't read it properly. I should have done. It was that, but it was like right on the back, and they just said, "This is what we're going to do." They didn't. It was a request for permission. It was just a statement that was what we're going to do. And I contacted the school. I was really quite angry about this, and I said, "Why are you doing this?" And they said, "Oh, it's nothing to worry about, Mr. Emlyn Jones. We are creating a database so children can borrow books from the library, and we have a fingerprint scanner for them to use." So my nose is itching. Always happens when I'm talking. And that's an obvious example, I think, of a lie, because when I made further inquiries, I was essentially stonewalled. I tried to contact the headmistress of the school, got no response. She wouldn't return my calls or messages. I tried to contact the local education authority, got no response. I suddenly realised this: what they were doing, I think, was they wanted a fingerprint database of the children. For other purposes, probably because I think the government in the future would like to have a database state where they can really our entire lives are controlled through our access to everything is controlled through a biometric data system, and this is a part of it. And I think that's so. The lie was, "Don't worry, it's just about the library." I mean, when I was at school, see, we had library cards. And they work perfectly well. I don't know why you need some sophisticated electronic device instead. But there you go. And that's an example of, I think, a big lie, one that hit me very hard in my own life. I told the school that I actually said that no account must they ever do this to my daughter, never. And I told her that I said I would remove her from the school if that happened, or if they even tried. I told her to refuse. I told her she had to refuse. If that happened now, I probably would have just taken her out of school anyway. I'd have done that immediately.
Yeah, but now, like that sounds, it sounds like now. I mean, that's like crazy. 'Cause back, back in the day, so that was when she was 11. So that was, what year was this? Like 10 years ago or something? Or,
2006. So
oh,
it's
but,
like it's a long time ago. She's nearly 29 now. Yeah.
oh my gosh, that is a little, yeah. So they're just going ahead and collecting them. See, I'm terrible. I'm really bad about it too. So yeah, so that, 'cause now they're about to go into that whole thing about the fingerprints, they want all of that from us. So yeah. And so they're in the UK though. I mean, like I always thought that in that country that it was similar to ours, but and I think you it maybe is now, because I think they're it's both countries, yours and mine, are both doing some not good things. So
It's happening across the world, and in most of the nations have some kind. Most nations have some kind of program now for this, which is strange because these sovereign states are supposedly masters of their own destiny, and the supposed leaders of these states are all complying with the same policy, which is strange. I think. I mean, there are exceptions, of course, but. There's a guy just been elected in Argentina he seems to be very much against this sort of thing. But there have been other exceptions. But most nations are going along with it, as if it is as if there's some kind of global policy which is being covertly introduced in supposedly independent sovereign states. And this is something I've noticed generally around the world, this trend towards greater internationalism and authoritarianism. This is what led me to set up my website, Become Active. So yeah, that's a huge concern for me, and it's something I do hope that I certainly won't comply with. I mean, and my daughter's been quite sympathetic, I think, to me. She's been pretty sympathetic in this regard. So yeah, I just I th I it concerns me that the ideas like freedom and things like that seem to, it's almost like they're now kind of old fashioned.
it's crazy. It, I mean, just it's like all of a sudden. So it was like I was listening to you on this podcast, and you were saying that you were already. It was years ago. You were already in the world. What is it, the world order? The new world order. You were already against that years ago.
Yeah, I've actually been doing this a long time. I've always been, I suppose my whole life I've been on this sort of wavelength. I mean, I remember reading books when I was a child about UFOs and ghosts and monsters. I was very interested in that. One of my favorite TV program was Arthur C. Clarke's Mysterious World, which is really good. You can get them on YouTube now. I've rewatched them all. They're really, really good. But in the 1980s, this was like a big popular mainstream TV show about the paranormal and UFOs and ghosts and all those kinds of things. I think, when I started to take this more seriously when I became an adult, and by the mid-90s, I was a regular consumer of. I started going online, and I became a regular consumer of books and websites related to this. But to me, it was still then a bit abstract until. I think there was 9/11 happened, and that was a major. I think that was something very, very, very catalytic to me, as it is to many, many people. I think it was 2000, and then I started becoming active on forums. I started posting on forums and things like that. This was in the pre-Facebook and Twitter days. And then in 2005, there was that incident with the fingerprinting. It was five or six, I think it was five actually. And that really galvanized me. And that's when I set up my own website and started producing my own content. Yeah.
Wow. And have you ever had like people try to stop you because you talk about this?
I've had yes, in fact, the reason I'm an ex-hospital porter is because I was told at one point that what I was doing was inappropriate and offensive and unprofessional. And this is when I was a hospital porter for 23 years. I mean, it was something I was very proud of. And this is what I call my website, Hospital Porters Against the New World Order. And they said, well, and they said, well, this is offensive material, and you're linking it to your job. You can't do that. And I thought, well, it's a long story, but basically, they ended up firing me.
Wow. But you stood up for what you believed in.
I did. I didn't back down to them. I'm proud of myself for that. I did. I sensed that there was something a bit weird going on. I mean, I spoke to a couple of solicitors, and they said there was something strange going on there. Like, someone was telling them to. My immediate management had instructions from higher up telling them to get rid of me.
Well, I mean, look at
So,
this. So,
I'm
like
not the only
hospital.
one either. I'm not the only one.
Yeah, and well, I mean, you know, I thought our hospitals were pretty good places until the pandemic. And then I mean, it was like, what in the heck? It's like they all complied just blindly and
Yeah.
didn't. So, I mean, probably it was a blessing you weren't there.
Yeah, I'd probably have ended up being sacked for another reason if I hadn't, because there's no way I would get the I don't know how much we can say V word, the medication. I would have
Right.
refused. I mean, I did anyway, but I would have refused that. And I know that several NHS, a lot of NHS employees were threatened with losing their jobs over that. Now, I don't know how many of them actually did. I know there were some class action lawsuits against it, which I would have joined had I been there. But
Yeah.
the trade unions were pretty useless. They would, as they tend to be. So yeah, I mean, I don't think I'd have lasted there much longer anyway. I know hospitals are supposed to be nice places, but there's a lot of corruption in them, and like all state institutions, you get a lot of. It seems that the weakest and most compliant people tend to be put in positions of control, which
Yeah.
then allows higher forces to essentially have their way with the entire institution. Anyone who
Yeah.
sort of like stands up to them doesn't really go very far in the and doesn't go very far in terms of promotion, which is why I was probably was a basic grade for 23 years. I'm quite glad of that. I'd wonder what I was doing wrong otherwise,
Wow, that's so interesting. And so grew up. Well, how, okay, and I was listening to a show talking about how when you saw a little boy one night when you woke up, and the boy was praying, and it was so I see spirits. So
Oh, you
I
do, right?
a lot of children here on the property that we have seen and actually recorded and different things. So what was your life like growing up? You lived in a house that was possibly haunted and things like that. Could you talk about your upbringing?
Yeah, I come from West Wales. I was born in Aberystwyth, West Wales. My fa father was from a Bristol Welsh family. My mother was a Dutch woman who met my dad in Birmingham when they both lived in Birmingham. She was an au pair, actually, in the 1960s here in England. But yeah, the first house I lived in Wales was my uncle told me that was haunted. My brother used to talk about strange things that he'd seen there. Then we moved to Oxford, and I ended up living in a house with this was yeah this was it's 1996. So this was just after I split up from my partner, who's my daughter's mother, and I moved into another house. I woke up very suddenly, and I don't know if this house was haunted specifically. This was the only experience I had in that particular house, but I sort of woke up and I was completely wide awake, and I looked around me, and there was like a spectral image, like a young boy kneeling on the floor like that, as if he was praying, and he was translucent, as if he was made out of smoke that kept its shape. And there was some lumin. It was slightly luminescent, so because otherwise I wouldn't have seen him. And he turned his head and looked at me, and just lifted up into the air and slowly vanished. Never forgotten that. I wasn't frightened, but it was a minor mediumistic kind of experience I had out there, I think. Yeah, I was. I can't prove it wasn't just some hypnopompic illusion. But I was wide awake at the time. I remember I was totally awake, and a very interesting experience that was, Mercedes. Yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, do you feel like that was a message to you? There was a message in there?
I don't think so. No, there was no message as such. It was
Just
just
showing.
that, yeah, it's just as if this individual just appeared. I don't, for some reason, maybe because of my state of consciousness, I've had other experiences where I'm in a kind of half asleep state, and I've seen strange things. For example, in 2007, I had a very interesting experience. There's a lot of evidence. This is a very important case because there's evidence for it. I just started a relationship with my partner at the time, who was called Susan. And I was on my way back from visiting her in, she lived in Nottingham and I lived in Oxford. It's like a 3-hour train ride. And I was on the train, and there was I was sort of half asleep sitting in the seat. It was evening time and it was dark outside. You know, when you're on a train or a bus or something, the windows, the windows act like kind of mirrors because it's dark outside. There's light inside the cabin. And I was like this, looking at the reflection in the window, and I suddenly saw the reflection of a man who was standing in the aisle. This man, I could actually see him himself in my peripheral vision, but I was staring straight at his reflection. A man in, he had a white bar steward's jacket on. He was a bit indistinct, but I could see him quite clearly. Middle-aged man, thin hair. When I went and saw Sue the following week, she said, "Oh, blimey!" And she went and took out a photograph and a photo album, which I'd not seen before. And she opened it up and she pointed to a picture and she says, "Is that the man you saw?" And I said, "Looks a bit like him, yeah." And she says, "Oh, that's my dad. He died in 1988. It was kind of a thunderclap moment. Yeah.
So he was there on the train with you.
The spirit, yeah. It just says a lot, actually. If he was a spirit, if he was the spirit of Sue's father, it indicates that he had a memory of the life he'd had, and also an ability to see into our world. And like any father, he was concerned about the kind of men hanging around with his daughter, and he may have been following me around to see what kind of man I was. It's just that's that is it's the fact that I didn't know what her dad looked like. I'd never seen him before, and I had this encounter with someone that looked a bit like, well, certainly looked very like him. Yeah.
And
Strange
so,
that.
like, you were telling her about it, and then all of a sudden she gets an idea to just show you a picture.
Yeah, I described the individual and she said, "Oh, what?" And she got the, and obviously she thought that that sounded a bit like what he looked like. Yeah. But he died in 1988.
And what year was that?
Oh, this happened in 2007, so that was almost 20 years later. But he's
That's
still looking into our world, concerned about the people he's left behind, his daughter, you know, people he's left behind.
I told you. So what do you think about time travel?
Time travel now is literal time travel. There are some problems with it in terms of plausibility because there are things such as paradoxes. These are illustrated very well in some of the fiction, for example, of Doctor Who. And Back to the Future. If you go back in, for example, if you well, forwards time travel is not a problem because you can actually, if you go very fast, travel very fast, you will go into the future. There's a guy called Valery Polyakov, who was an astronaut who was on the Mir space station for 13 months. He traveled 1.8 milliseconds into the future by circling the Earth for 17,000 miles an hour for 13 months. Going back in time, though, is different because you're going, you. Essentially, where, for example, where you're going doesn't really exist, and secondly, there's time, there's causality paradoxes. Now, what you can do, and now within the many worlds hypothesis, which posits there are many, many parallel universes, the experience of time travel is possible because there's somewhere out there, because every possible universe exists according to this theory. Therefore, there is a universe out there that is identical to or very closely resembles Earth's own past. Now, if you visit that universe by traveling interdimensionally, you will find yourself in having the experience of time travel. And what's more, there's no causality paradoxes. You could leave and come back, and things would be exactly as you left them. You know, you wouldn't like stop your parents meeting and then cease to exist, which is the Marty McFly character in Back to the Future had to—he essentially stopped his parents from getting together and had to get them back together again. Otherwise, he would have ceased to exist. That's a causality paradox, you see. But you wouldn't have that in interdimensional travel, only in literal time travel.
What do you think about so one of the things that I can do is or came to me to do is remote viewing. And so like I when I work with people in certain times that I'm working with people, all of a sudden I will go back into a place where these where something's at. So I'm transported into that world, and there's stuff happening. So to me, it's almost like going into through portals or whatnot. You know, like you go into places and it's all happening around. Like you, it's like I'm wide awake. So it's a very, very interesting. And I know I talked to Kev about it, you know, and so I thought I would ask you about that. But another question I have is, what do you feel about lizard people?
I've know many people who've encountered them. Too many, I think, for it to be just a something silly and a hoax and a joke. I think there are people. I think it's credible. I think there's a lot of credibility. I met a lady called Susan Reed, had a long conversation with her. By the time I finished this conversation, I was convinced that she was telling me the truth. I mean, these are people who individuals who can who appear to be human in some states, but then become another creature in others. And especially psychically sensitive people can see them, like remote, you mentioned remote viewing. Sensitive people like that can see them. Sometimes when they, this is the shape shifting phenomenon, and I think it's real. I think it's real, and I know it's that's a con it's controversial even within the in sort of the dis in the woosphere, but it does exist, I think. It's connected to things like remote viewing. I've done a remote viewing course, which is interesting, and
Very
got some
interesting.
good results. Yeah, I spoke to a couple of remote viewers because last weekend I was at the Stairway to the Stars conference in Las Vegas, and it was really good. It's really good.
Very interesting. Well, mine happened after I was in these two back to back, I mean, literally two accidents that I should have died. Like the car was demolished and I was seriously hurt. And then a few months later, I mean, I couldn't walk. And then the next one happened, you know, it was like near death, like almost dying. And then I ended up being able to see right away. And so then I got with this doctor, the doctor. And I started to work for this doctor, and so I we didn't like talk about it. So he just retired this year in February. So it's kind of like all of a sudden now I'm actually allowed to speak about like the work I did. When before I kind of it was like a doctor, so we were medical. But yeah, so that's part of it. Is it's I think it's very fascinating. And very real. So what. You know, and I'm a normal person, and I have a good you know, I have a good what's the word? You know, like I don't know, I have a good reputation, so it's not like I'm a kook. And this is real; it happens with people, and so I think it's interesting that there's classes and stuff on that. The lizard people. I was just watching this old movie, The Chariots of the Gods, and I hadn't watched that since I was a kid, right? I don't, you know, even know. And so, I was given that gift and the other a couple of weeks ago, and sure enough, Ben, in that show, which is actually phenomenal. There's, I mean, that's kind of kooky because I remember like, wow, the natives are like that. But if you think about it, like you see the natives and you're like, okay, now I realize that was set. I mean, that was like not real, you know, but actually that everything that they went to was real. And that was way back then. But one of the places in this movie or documentary is a whole land, whole area, like where it has statues. I mean, it was like a civilization all for a lizard people.
That's very good. I mean, it's got Captain Kirk, isn't it? William Shatner as the
No.
present. Oh no, I'm thinking of something else. Okay. Yeah, but it's
The Gods is a documentary from the old days about all over the world. You hadn't heard of it? Have you heard
I've
of it?
not I've seen one called Mysteries of the Gods. That's it, with William Shatner presents it, and it's like it's we're talking about two different things, but yeah, there are statues, and there are cave paintings, very old cave paintings, which show reptilian humanoid beings. And there's even a statue here in Oxford in Magdalen College, and which appear to show reptilian humanoid. There are two actually, in this courtyard in Magdalen College. And I asked about them. No one really knows much about it. They say it's to do with heraldry, The whole that it was all put up there about 500 years ago. That particular part of the building was created, was constructed about 500 years ago, and but no one
Long
really
time.
knows what. Sorry?
That's a long time ago,
Yeah,
500.
no one really knows much about who designed it. It's they got some names, but it's so long ago that not there are no real records that exist except the building itself, and it has this reptilian humanoid being, and it has like a. Something's coming out of its stomach, and it's like a human head in its stomach. It looks very, it's very creepy, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know how many of the students walk past that and think, that's a bit weird.
Yeah,
But,
that's what I'm. I think it, that's like, I think that was going on. Like, these things were back then, and somehow they were absorbed into our society, so people really didn't know about it.
You find them everywhere, all over the world. I mean, there's that amazing interview David Icke did with Cradle Mutwa, the guy from South Africa, a Zulu, and he describes the presence of this myth in the indigenous African tradition. It's everywhere, and in Mexico they have this thing called the Iguana race. And Kathy O'Brien said she spoke to Miguel de la Madrid, who was president of Mexico, I think back in the 70s. And he said he was one of the iguana race, and then he like shapeshifts in front of
Whoa.
her.
Yeah,
Yeah.
with that, wasn't there a president, I think, or somebody of Mexico that right during the pandemic actually said, yes, UFOs are real, but then that people started shooting him down? Do you remember that? I mean,
I.
Kathy probably.
Oh, right. Mexico. I don't. I mean, there's been a very interesting hearing in Mexico recently where the former Speaker of the House of Mexico, the President of the, it's called the President of the Chamber of Deputies, did a speech, and he's one of the most senior people in the government, and he did a speech about UFOs and how they were real, and then they brought on witnesses, but that was quite recent. That was like just a couple of months ago. That was
Oh,
some.
no, hear about that. Wow.
Right.
Because
Yeah, oh, that was.
I know that the last person, it was during the pandemic, and so here comes this man, and they were saying he's a high up official of, I'm pretty sure Mexico, one of the Mexican or Spain or something, and people were like, oh no, he's lying. But I'm like, why would this man come out and lie? You know, why is
All
this,
right.
why do you do that? You know.
Isn't, you think it might have been another country, not Mexico? I'm trying to
I also have to find out where it was. I'm
Yeah.
pretty sure it was
There
like
must be. Because
maybe.
that would be remarkable if he's is a sitting head of government saying something like that. I mean, that's only happened once in all of history that I know of, and that is Grenada. It's a tiny little island in the Caribbean, and that is a guy called Sir Eric Geary, who was the first Prime Minister of Grenada. He actually did address the United Nations in 1978 and said, "Yeah, they're real."
You know, that's just, I think that 1978, and like nobody, you know, like, I mean, it's where, what do we do as people? Like, we're not even listening, you know? It's weird. So tell me a little bit about what you're doing now. Like, what are you keeping yourself busy doing now?
Well, I am still working on doing the show, doing my show, my radio show. I'm writing my various blogs, and I'm producing videos for my video. Well, not just YouTube. I use other sites as well because YouTube are banning things too much, and I've been writing a serial, a fictional serial as well, with a similar theme to the Roswell trilogy. And I've been trying to market the book and sell it to various places, advertise it in various locations, because I think it's the sort of thing most people who follow this sort of thing would like. And I'm just doing that. I'm giving out as much information as I can. I'm commentating on the whole situation, which is, I think, necessary in this world. Because it is, we are living in essentially an information war, to quote Alex Jones, and the shield and the weaponry of this war is information or lack of it. I think knowledge and acting on knowledge is the key to between is the difference between victory and defeat.
I agree. I think that's very good. Yeah. One of the things I was thinking about asking was about, you seen David, do you follow David Pilates of or Pilates of Missing 411?
Yes, I do. And I've not read his book, but I've watched his documentaries. Now, This is really quite, it shocked me when I first came across this. Even though I'd heard of a few cases of the kind he talks about, there was
Right.
one in Scotland in the 60s, for example. But people just vanishing for no reason. Now, of course, people do come, do disappear. Some of them are kidnapped and killed by criminals. Sometimes in some countries they'll be attacked by predators. I know in that's not really a problem here in Britain, but you have bears and cougars and things in the in the wild in the United States, in parts of North America. Some people who disappear do so because they want to. They deliberately make themselves because they want to start a new life. But the cases that David Poilides brings up are different. He excludes those possibilities. It's like you just get this group of old men go out hunting and they're all in the woods, and then just this guy, they just can't find him. He's just like, he just they go back, they go to meet up afterwards and he's gone. And this is just like a few hundred yards from the road. It's and it's no where could he have gone, because there's only one road, and where and why would he have done that? It's weird. It's and there's other examples as well.
The shoes are off of the feet of the missing people, and then the clothes are nicely folded, and then they find the body like years later or months later, like clear across where they, how could they even
Yeah,
walk?
and
Things like,
sometimes the clothes and the shoes turn up after the area's been searched. And as I
yeah.
said, it's like they've been just left folded. Sometimes all the equipment will be there. Sometimes the dead body disappear, reappear, again after the area's been searched. And the mountain rescue people and are very, very good and that sort of thing. And I mean, what's weird is that when the mountain rescue teams go in there, this happened recently with a guy called Konstantinos Filippidis, and he's got an unusual name, so I always remember that one. This is a Canadian chap who was he was skiing at the White Mountain in New York, and he just disappeared. He just vanished. And when the mountain rescue went and did a search, and then I think the FBI turned up and the Ho Department of Homeland Security, which is not normally the kind of thing they get involved with. And Poilides said this: you wouldn't normally get the FBI and are these other organizations just looking for missing people in the woods? Filipinas, oddly enough, turned up like 3,000 miles away in Sacramento, California. He just reappeared, still wearing his skiing suit and his skiing helmet. No idea where he'd been. But he was,
Wow.
yeah,
Yeah.
very sometimes some people are lucky enough to reappear.
Yeah. Did you watch that one? Did you see the movie that he had out during Christmas, the missing the UFO connection?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That
So
was
like that one, wow. I mean, that's like really that one man they had out from the government. He's basically saying, I mean, everybody they had. I mean, it was like, these things are actually happening out there.
Yeah. They do, and what's more, the government seem to know about it and they've taken an interest in it. But they're not telling us. They won't. They're not doing it openly. They're doing it. They're obviously studying this secretly. And the question is, this was, I mean, this was the first of the films he's made. I mean, this is the third of his films where he does actually put forward some kind of thesis, Poilides, because previously it had just been, he never really explained why he thought these people were disappearing. It was just a list of cases, and a human interest story, really. But he just explained why he thought it wasn't happening. We knew that he was hinting there was some kind of supernatural force at work here. And there are stories of people just being snatched away in the woods, all over North America. These date back to pre-Columbian times. So, what's something weird going on? I mean, what was really weird was in The Hunted, the second one. There was those guys in California who came across those weird noises in the woods. The strange whooping sounds and the chattering sounds. And they even built themselves like a palisade out of logs to hide behind, to hide inside when these things were going on. You must
Okay.
have seen, you saw that. Did you see that bit?
No, I didn't. I'm
All right.
still get the other ones. I haven't got them yet. I need to watch them. I've tried to see how to get them. But so yeah, so that's what happened. Like they, yeah, I didn't realize that that's what he had done, that this one was completely different than the other ones.
Oh, right,
Yeah,
yeah, the
so
first two are like just like the UFO connection, though, is probably the most interesting one. Yeah, it's definitely the most interesting.
you make documentaries too, then. Do you do
Yeah,
some okay, I now I have I apologize, I haven't seen it, so I need to
that's all
look
right. I
back.
mean, you seem to have know you seem to know a lot about me, and what you see, you've obviously looked into me before doing the show. You've done your research, but yeah, you can get me. You can find me on YouTube, BitChute, Rumble, Odyssey, and I upload videos regularly as often as I can. I just uploaded a big long video all about my trip to the Stairway to the Stars, things like that. And I actually had see this one thing I discussed with Kev on one of the last it was one of the last shows we did. It was a couple of months before he passed away. I had a weird experience like that myself
Okay.
in some in here in Oxford. I was just I had missing time. I know I had missing time. I was doing a job. I mean, one of my jobs is to do some shopping for somebody. I'm an old lady who can't get out much, so I do her shopping for her. And I was on my way to the shops, and I walked along this like pathway, and there's like woods on either side, and I just popped into the bushes because I needed to go to the toilet, basically. And when I came out, I mean, I didn't notice anything strange happening, except there was someone walking towards me up the path, and they were so far away. I thought I could go in there, into the bushes, do my business, and come out again, and they wouldn't know that they wouldn't be able to see me. But when I came out, that person was gone, and I thought, well, that's weird, because I'm sure I saw them walking towards me, and I thought, well, I just shrugged and thought I must have made a mistake. They were walking back the other way, or they disappeared into one of the side alleys or something like that. When I got to the shop, I did my shopping. When I got to the lady's house, it was like about between, it was 40 to 50 minutes later than it should have been. That's only then that I noticed the time, because I just wasn't bothered looking at the time, and I thought, what on earth happened there? That worried me a bit. You know, it's concerned me. I've had nothing like, nothing like that's happened since, but that was a disturbing experience when that happened.
That is weird. And so it's all on the outside, and there was a person walking, and normally that person would still been walking there.
Yeah, I made a little video like retracing my steps. It's on my channel.
Oh, I'm gonna watch that.
Where I retraced my steps that day, and I just explained to the viewers what happened.
What did Kev think it was? I
Kev
think
was very interested.
I think I remember something about, I think I'm sure I watched that show, but it was so they're like 3 hours, so
It was he was very interesting. Now, unfortunately, I can't find the podcast. I can't find the podcast of that particular show. I've got about of what I re I've got like a few of the ones I did with Kev. I've got maybe half of them or so. But he was very interested. He was like, excuse me. Oh, he was very interested in it. And we had a long discussion about it. And he took it seriously, like he does. I mean, he was very open-minded.
Yeah.
He's very open-minded indeed.
How did you meet him? How did you first get on with his?
I was on the Truth Frequency. I was on the Christopher Everard show
Oh.
on the Truth Frequency radio, because Chris contacted me and asked me if I wanted to be on. I think we were talking about the death of Diana in Paris, which is something he's researched personally. And Kev was on the show, and we did like a round table, and that's how I met Kev. And then like a little bit later, Kev asked me to be on his show. He contacted me and asked me to be on his show, and I was really pleased, because like Kev's show is the flagship show really on that channel. You know, it's by far the most the biggest show on the channel. And before long, I mean, we became kind of friends, and I got a regular slot essentially. Every month he'd do a show with me, and it became one of his regular slots. And that went on for about 8 years or so. I mean, I met him once as well, because I went to the Scottish UFO and Paranormal Conference in Glasgow, and he was there, so I did meet him. I met him once, face to face. It was great to
Wow.
actually see him. Yeah, it was great to see him at
Wow.
last, after knowing him online all that time. But he died, so I mean, I know he was ill, but I didn't think he died quite that suddenly, and he did, unfortunately. Yeah, it's very sad.
So sad. And I was editing, so I'm going to use some of the clips from Ev talking to me when I was on the show about what's happening out here for the documentary. And today I was editing that, and there were several things that I'm using, but one of them, when it was on, it could almost kind of tell his voice was slower. And so I was Well, it probably was one of those days when he wasn't feeling that good, but because it would have been the last year. But anyway, yeah, I just, you know, that's really neat. I figured it was a long-term time that you were on there, the way he spoke about you. Do you ever know what, do you remember when he would had those people on? I don't know if you were part of one of those days where they had Indigenous, the people that were in Australia. Do you remember those people?
The Aborigines, yeah, I don't, I know the shows you're talking about because they were interesting actually, because the Australian Aborigines have a mythology which fits very closely with modern ufology. It's this, in other words, the ancient aliens and other ancient aliens theories from around the world. Australia is no exception. They have these creatures called the Wanginas, and if you ask them to show you a photo of a Wangina, these are like creator spirits from what they call the first, I think they call it the dream time. They look like grey aliens. And there's paintings of them 5,000 6,000 years old on the walls of caves and mountains and things like that. And they said, yeah, in the ancient times, these creatures came to Earth and they interacted openly with people, which
And they
is
were giant.
again,
They like the giant kind of, they were very large.
yeah, some of them were. And I mean, they this actually can be found in mythology all over the world. There's of course Genesis 12. There were giants on the earth in those days, and it's actually said, it's I can't remember the exact verse, but it's in the Bible.
Yeah.
And there's many other. Funny enough,
Lot.
there's a skull of a there's a giant skull that was found in Nevada sometime in the 19th century, which is in it's in the Smithsonian Museum. It's not on display. And there's a cover up of the whole thing, you know. It's
Yeah, that's what they were saying, that the I remember, and I've, you know, we've seen this in movies, but they, the Smithsonian is really part of what covering was covering up the thing that these people were doing in the where they were finding the giant bones. And
yeah.
so the Smithsonian was trying to actually stop what these people are doing. I hope that they're all right. I always like, well, I hope they're okay, you
Yeah,
know.
there's definitely these things are not publicized. For example, there was an incident in Iraq a couple of years ago, an archaeologist. I remember it well. His name was Muhammad Ali, like the boxer.
Yeah.
He found, I think it was there were n 19 bodies, and they were all like, I think almost 10 feet tall, and they had like clothing and eating utensils to match, and they were in these graves in somewhere in Iraq. And that was
Wow.
there was a brief news story about it, and then it was just forgotten. It just disappeared.
Yeah.
I think we've been lied to about our past. And I think Michael Cremo, who was one of the speakers at the conference I just been to, he said that. And of course, this is what's mentioned in the Ancient Aliens series, that we have a distorted view of our past.
Exactly, especially like when you look at, so I'm going to watch that. I think I've probably seen it. I want to, I'm going to send you the link to that one I'm talking about, because it's
Thanks.
fact, absolutely fact. But so what about, what's like for UFOs? So like if around here, let's say there, I mean, we've seen them. I've seen them. So I'm in Arizona, and I've seen them. My husband has seen them. People have seen them. Do you think there's a difference in certain areas? Like we are by missile silos. Like we have missile, like right down the road, old ones.
All right.
Yeah. What do you know about that? I did get a. I'm listening to Kev and them talking about missile silos. So I just was wondering what you think about
I
that.
think they do. This is they do UFO incidents happen everywhere. Encounters happen all over the place. They happen every day, but they are focused. Certain areas tend to attract them more, and one of those is. One thing we can know about their behavior, because we don't know much about them in terms of their behavior, except they do seem to have an interest. At least some of them have an interest in our nuclear weapons systems, and this is why possibly the detonation of the first atomic bombs in the 1940s brought them in more and more. This is when you get like essentially the global flap that continues to this day, and missile silos. Now, I myself took a photograph of a nuclear base in Scotland. I was just on holiday. I was on a hiking holiday in the Firth of Clyde in eastern Scotland. And I happened to take a photograph, and there was a nuclear base in there. And there was a little UFO in the photo, a little tiny little UFO. It's like a flying saucer. I didn't see anything at the time, but it was there. But other people have actually seen things for real. I mean, there's so many examples. I mean, Captain Robert Salas, for example, who was a missileer. He was one of the part of the launch crew, which, you know, who would press the button if the order came through to launch the missiles. He'd be the one who had to press the button and send them on their way. So obviously, his mental health is of enormous concern, because if he got a screw loose, you know, it'd be the end of the world if he got a screw loose. So, no one can say he was crazy, but he said there's absolutely no doubt that there was a presence of some red glowing objects near his base. And and what's more, the moment this happened, the missiles all like shut down, and it took him about 3 days to repair them. And they couldn't find out. They didn't know what was wrong with them. They just sort of like switched them on and off a few times, and then they restarted or something like that. But he now does lots of lectures and things. There was actually a hearing in Washington about it recently, or a press conference. There's a book and a film called UFOs and Nukes by Robert Hastings. Now they're interested in our nuclear deterrent. I mean, for whatever reason. I mean, it could be that they don't want us to use them, and if we ever launch them, they'd stop it. I hope so. Or they're planning to invade us, and they're gathering intelligence on our most potent defenses. I mean, it's good news or bad news. I don't know.
Right. Well, that's very interesting. I think it's interesting that we're surrounded in.
And you've seen them a lot. You yourself have seen them an awful lot, and that's interesting.
Right down the street, because I used to wonder what is that, because it's a man owns it, so they'll actually sell. These are several of them where people will own it and they'll build a house on top of it. And so as I was doing this research, I was for 7 years, I tried so hard once I found the pieces. And it was only till this year, just a few months ago, that I've talked to archaeologists. I've talked to the mayor who was born and raised here. And both of them said that there was no real, I mean, they both kind of, they didn't know or whatever, but there was, not only was that missile silo there, but in the government records, because I somehow found it, where it talked about missile silo, let's say missile silo number 4. I can't remember which one it was. And that's the one. It was a street name. It was it's our area. And it said that when they were first going to decide to do that, you know, they go to research it, dig, look around there. They said that there was a huge Hohokam village there that ranged for about 4 or 5 miles. So it's right on the path, which is what I always knew they were here. And so that's why I had to go to the archaeologists and stuff and, you know, research. But so it's all here. It's all right there. And so it says that they should have put it up for a historic place, like a historic area, but they didn't. They went ahead and created that missile silo. So that's pretty bad. What do you think? I mean,
without planning permission. Yeah, I mean, that's obviously that's you shouldn't be able to do that without planning permission. But I mean, it's obviously, like, even though you weren't told, you local people didn't know about it. Somebody else did, who was slightly more exotic. They knew about it.
Yeah.
And they sometimes, whatever these UFOs are, they do seem to know a lot about us. And they know a lot more about us than we know about them. And they know things like during the 2004 Nimitz encounter, the pilot said these UFOs seemed to know in advance the course that these aircraft were going to take. The pilots actually knew that, and only the pilots and the people behind the exercise knew that, and the officers on the ship knew that. So it's almost like they can read our minds, or they have their own remote viewing abilities.
Yeah, and then that David Pilates missing 411 UFO. That man was sitting there talking like. They didn't even talk. So, I mean, that's what I feel like. They can just read everything. Just, you know, animals can do that.
Animals. Oh, dogs especially seem to have a little way of knowing. Certainly, if you've had a bad day and something's gone wrong, you go in, the dog knows it. They'll come over and try and comfort you, you know. It's interesting to sense that. And I mean, a lot of people have encounters with extraterrestrials, and even the ones that are very human looking, and they'll say, well, this being didn't speak to me, but I could hear its voice in my head. That's a common recurring thing, that they have like telepathic communication.
And so, gosh, it's almost time to go.
It's all
This
right.
sounds so great. I bet you're tired,
Ooh.
huh?
Oh, it's all right. I mean, yeah, I'm a little bit, but I'll be okay. I've done these sort of late night shows before. Yeah, it's just time zones, because we live so far apart. It's the usual problem.
I really appreciate you coming on, and so we've got like a few minutes, but I want to just tell us your website. Just go ahead and give the audience that information where they can reach and find out about you.
Sure, I mean it's Hospital Porters Against the New World Order. HP, just put the acronym into Google Hpanwo, Hpanwo, and you'll find all my stuff there. You'll find all my material. There's an awful lot there. I mean, I've been creating content since I started that in 2006. So there's an awful lot on there. Yeah, but I've got a few like portals so people can find diff I put a few portals on the main site so people can find like the subjects they're looking for,
Are you on Rumble?
Yes. I'm on all I mean, you can't put all your eggs in the mainstream social media basket now because they're banning you when you talk about certain things. And they're shadow banned. So I spread everything I can on different. I've got a Substack page as well, because if I want to write about something that's a bit too controversial, because bloggers now banning certain things, they don't let you talk about like the pandemic, for example. So I sometimes have to put things on Substack.
Well, I love that you were already ahead of the game before I was, actually. That's pretty neat. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, I hope none of this, I think it's bad. So I'm really glad that you came on to talk and give us and let's just say this is your opinion, it's my opinion, and we're not here to cause any issues. We're just here to talk about the truth.
Yeah, that's all we can do. And I mean, everyone's on their own journey in this. Some people come into it later than more earlier than others. I think it's like when it's right for you'll come across the right information, I think. It
Exactly.
seems like it feels like that's if it's your destiny, you'll come across it. I think people will.
I think so too. I think you're spot on. And thank you again for being on the
Oh, you're
show.
welcome. You're welcome, Sages. Thank you for having me on. Thank you to Stan and everyone, thank you.
I
Been
hope that
great.
you come back again someday, and maybe I'll do like a I can do a instead of this, we could always just maybe film you in a different time, and then I could just put it on live stream. But I really wanted you to be on the live stream because it goes out live,
I'd be glad to,
So
yeah. I'd be glad to, yeah. You're welcome to come as a guest on my show as well, because I interview guests as well. You'd be a good guest.
I would love that. I would love that. I just got told that I'm going to be on. I don't know if you might have seen it, but I get to be on a guest on the Archbishop Ronald. He was just on my show the other day, but he's like this huge exorcist man.
Oh, right.
Oh
An
my God.
exorcist.
I'm going to be, yeah. So we've had exorcisms out here on this property. And so he asked me to be on this, his first podcast, which I'm like, oh my God, it's like,
Oh, excellent.
I love all
I'm sure
this.
that'll be interesting. I mean, I'm interested in real. I mean, of course, I've seen the film, which is a scary film, but I mean, I'm really interested in what real life exorcism might be like.
Yeah,
I've
well,
seen
I bet
videos of a few of them.
they're so yeah, so I'll send you some links, Sam, because it's really fascinating. It's just really fascinating, especially when I'm on the other side of it. Like we're not where we were. So now we're in a different space, and life is much better. So
Oh, good.
it's a lot. It's just amazing all the stuff that actually happens in people's lives. It's crazy. But thank you so much, and I want to thank our
Oh, you're welcome.
listening audience. We want to thank our sponsors. We want to thank everybody, anybody that's listening to this right now or in the future. I thank you with gratitude. Please be sure to reach out to Ben, on his Facebook or on his connections, and let him know that you heard him on here. That would be great. And you can reach out to me as well. I'm on all those. I'm actually on Instagram now, which I wasn't before. And that's trying to do all that's crazy, I think. But anyway, so we appreciate everybody, and thank you so much, Ben, for
You're
being
welcome.
On.
Thanks for listening, bye-bye. Everyone. Thanks, Mercedes, and have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Thank you so much for joining us here on the show, streaming live on Spreaker and the Web Radio Network. This is the Mercedes Lucky Benedict Show. You can find me on Facebook and YouTube. Please enjoy my music.
Every time that I've ever been knocked down, every time that I've ever gotten back up to face another round, I let go of my fear and put my pride down. I'm building my castle in heaven, climbing over mountains with the lessons I've been given. I'm building my castle in heaven. It's not made of mortar or stone. My castle is made from the seeds that I've sown. I'm building castles in heaven. Every challenge, every mistake, every time that I choose faith, I grow strong. I keep moving on and on and on. Every moment, every day, every word that you say, every step along your way, every time that you make a mistake. Every good deed that you do, each time that you win, each time that you lose, each time that you walk, you walk in another shoe. On this earth where we grow strong, when we learn to forgive and we right our wrongs. It's here.